And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Welcome to the Move the Sticks podcast. We are coming directly from Indianapolis Combine. We've seen day one of workouts wrap up, and I am joined by my man, Lance Zierlein, the one and only draft. I guess I would call you the draft Nick. You do all things related to the draft for us, and so it's a perfect time to have you on because I want to get your perspective on day one. What'd you think?
I was. It's funny because I watch these guys. I write them up. Bucky, you've been through this where you go in with an opinion, and there's people who don't invest the time that we do and that we have invested in terms of getting to know who these guys are on tape. And so for them, I think they're just looking with curiosity at the results, right? But for me, I'm looking, was I right about what I wrote about he didn't have long speed? Was I right about what I wrote that he did have the ability to separate vertically? These tests, some of these scores, I went back and looked at some of the worst performers, and then I looked at my notes to see if it had it in there, and yep, no separation, no this, no that. I said, okay, it checks out with my notes. Then I see other guys, and I'm like, wait, did I see Sky Moore might have some trouble separating vertically? That dude just ran a 6.41, so I mean a 4.41 rather. So, you know, you have to. It is a day where you start to get some confirmation, or you start to raise more questions about guys you saw. I have never in my entire life seen people run that fast in my entire life, other than the Olympics. I mean, that was bananas what the wide receivers were doing. I knew Olave would blow it out of the water. I knew that. I knew Tyquan Thornton was going to run really fast because that's a legit track guy. And by the way, we got track guys coming up with the DBs also, Tariq Woolen and Kalen Barnes. They're going to run really fast. But to see some of the other names that ran the way they did, Bucky, is this just – let me ask you, is this just the next phase in training where guys are trained up? There's only so much training you can do. It's one thing to run the three cone really fast and the short shuttle, and you learn the steps and you learn how to be more efficient. But at some point, you got to take off and run really fast for 40 yards. And so this is just like pure speed, right? Where's the evolution of speed where we have eight guys who are 4.3 or faster in one position group?
But I think, Lance, what's interesting is we had a lot of guys who had great straight line times. But normally, when you have guys that run as fast as they were running, you would also get exceptional verticals and broad jumps. We didn't necessarily get that. And so, to me, there's a little bit of a disconnect where maybe we got some straight line linear speed guys, but we may not have what I call true explosive athletes, meaning that they're able to explode and do it in all areas, meaning short area quickness, burst, change of direction, leap high, jump tall buildings in a single bound, all of those things. And so when I look at the guys that ran fast, and I'm thinking like Chris Olave and some of the other guys, when I looked at them physically, Lance, they didn't have big quads, big glutes, big hamstrings. And so it's a little deceptive because now I wonder about, hey, man, they may be straight line fast, but do they have any lower body strength and explosiveness? And so that would be the thing that scouts and evaluators will have to monitor going forward. Are these guys just kind of like straight line players, or are they really, truly explosive and dynamic athletes that we should be like, oh, okay, I understand, he's an A-level player?
Yeah, it's a lightweight class. I mean, when you go up and down the list, when I go down the list of tight ends and Chigakonkwo from Maryland ran a 4.52. He's like 230 some odd pounds, Buck. So, you know, I don't want to say you take it with a grain of salt. He's a lighter guy for a tight end, but a 4.52 for somebody in the 230s is still fast. But he's rocked up. Like, that's a strong guy who's more of like an H-back. He was a terrific tester. But then you look at, you know, Jelani Woods, who is a little lighter in his lower body, but he's six. That's because he's 6'7", almost 200 and, almost 260 pounds. That dude ran a 4.61. I mean, he looked really fast in the straight line. But then, as you mentioned, you know, the side-to-side stuff wasn't as good, but that matches up with his tape. You know, I know who he is. You get him in the seam. And so to talk about this for the listeners to understand, what some of these numbers will tell you is what you already know through watching film. He's a guy that can threaten the seam. You get him in linear routes, as you mentioned. You keep his feet moving. You don't make him break him down and break down a whole lot. And this is a big – he's a big dude. He's a really big dude. So some of this stuff is going to – like this straight line speed, I mean, it is going to matter for tight ends because now – the offensive coordinators can take a look and say, you know what? We want a guy who can threaten a seam and can kind of stretch defenses vertically from the middle of the field. Let's take a look at this guy, and we won't worry about having him run routes where he's got to stop the feet, break. You know, we're not going to do that. We don't do that with our offense anyway.
You know, it's funny, in Jelani Woods, we talk about someone who has crushed what I call the postseason. He's done it. When you go and watch him at the Eastway Shrine game, he was the most dominant tight end in the building. One, he was physically imposing. You talked about him being 6'7", that long wingspan. You could see when he was blocking, he was a willing and capable blocker because when he could latch his hands onto you, he could kind of control you. But then, Lance, he was solid in the passing game. Now he comes and he's one of the best testers at the tight end position. You pointed out the 4.61 in the 40. He had 24 reps on the bench press.
That's good, yeah.
You start looking at some of the other things, and now you're beginning to put a profile like, hey, you know, like I might need to kind of reevaluate who he is and what he can be, because he was very productive during his time at Virginia. And so it changes the narrative. And so when we think about the combine and how the combine can impact your draft status, like, it makes you have to go back and look at Jelani Woods and do a full evaluation of him.
Well, I tell you, another guy, Daniel Bellinger, who, you know, this guy is a pure Y, right? He is like 6'5", 253 in that neighborhood. I think these are updated numbers I'm looking at, 32.5-inch arms. But he did 22 reps, which is a good rep total for a tight end. He ran a 4.63. He had a 34.5 vertical jump, over 10-foot broad jump, which is impressive. And his three cone was a 7.05. 7.05 for a Y tight end is... I mean, that's a good number. He really tested well athletically. When you put the tape on, he is a relatively physical blocker. I mean, a true Y. So now all of a sudden, here's another tight end who we already had a Y, an inline tight end profile on him. And now he puts up numbers that are like day two type tight end numbers from an athletic standpoint. So Daniel Bellinger, San Diego State, is another guy who really helped himself with not just running a good 40 in the low 4.6s, but across the board, a strength number, a change of direction number, an explosiveness number. These numbers all start checking out. He checked a lot of boxes yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, like, here's the thing, man. A lot of guys were able to have success at the combine. Some of it is doing the training, is due to the training. More guys have exposure to elite level training that kind of gives them advantage on the competition because they're training for these events that are supposed to be kind of natural and organic, where you can kind of see what an athlete is and what he possesses in terms of the explosiveness. But one guy who didn't run, but kind of showed up, I had a chance to catch up with Texas A&M tight end Jalen Weidemeyer. Let's listen to his interview.
Proud to be joined on the Move to Six podcast by Jalen Weidemeyer, tight end from Texas A&M. How you doing? How's the combine been for you?
I'm good. The combine's been great so far. I would say the most nervous thing I was about was the interviews, and I feel like I've just talked to a family member or something. I feel real comfortable.
So coming up, like, there is a lot of conversation and probably a lot of nerves about what you're dealing with. When we talk about the interview process and the behind the scenes, what really was that like? You said it was like talking to a family member, but did they put you on the board? Did you just answer a lot of questions? What was that experience like?
Yeah, they put me on the board, answered a lot of questions. They asked basic questions, stuff like that. And pretty much just wanted to know everything about me that they don't know. And I pretty much told them everything that they needed to know. And they got me on the board. It was so good to get back to talking football. You know, I've been doing nothing but speed training and stuff like that. But getting back on this field and talking football is just like I'm ready to get back in some pads, you know.
I can certainly understand that. So when we think about Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher being one of the top coaches in college football, what were some of the things that you learned at Texas A&M at A&M that will help you be ready to play at a high level as a pro?
He showed me what I needed to be a high player, and he counted on me, and I'd learned how to be reliable, accountable. He taught me time management a lot, and he just taught me what it was to want it so bad that it would kill you if you don't get it. And that's the kind of competitive he came out with every day, and it motivated us as a team to be the same way, because there's no way our coach is going to want it more than we do. And he came out like he wanted it, you know, so.
I can dig that. So mm-hmm. for someone who hasn't had the opportunity to watch you and watch you play, how would you describe your game?
I describe it very versatile. I'm very versatile as in I can block. I feel like I block well. I can also catch the ball really well. I'm a big red zone target. I have a big catch radius, and I have really crisp route running.
Look, I don't know if anyone runs more post corners down in the red zone than you. Is that a deal that you and Jimbo Fisher have worked out that, hey, whenever we get inside the 20, I'm going to run a corner so I can score in the back of the end zone?
Hey, the deal was, hey, we in the red zone, you throw me the ball. And he said, and he said on first, second down, you better block your tail off. And, oh, hey, that's the deal.
Okay, so we're thinking about the National Football League. Who are some of the tight ends you enjoy watching?
Of course, the Kittle, Waller. Just, you know, them. I also grew up watching Antonio Gates, Rob Gronkowski, of course. So, yeah.
Anybody that you think, like, in 5 or 6 years, do you feel like your game will maybe reminisce?
I want to be that disruptive, bury somebody in the dirt blocker, and also want to catch the ball on you in big time games and big time plays and run it for 30 more yards and put our team in whatever field goal position we need to be. You know, I just want to be that player.
Okay, so final point. So you got a few more months before the draft. What are some of the things that you want to get done and accomplish while we're on the pro day circuit?
I'll go back to Miami and I'll train a lot more. I will get back to speed training, strengthening, and I'd also spend some time with family. You know, I've been away for a while, and yeah, that's all I'm really focused on right now, and my dog.
Oh, what kind of dog?
Pit bull bully.
Oh, yeah. I have a bully as well. Oh, yeah? So now we're kindred spirits. So hey, thanks so much for joining the Mood of Sticks podcast. Awesome. We wish you well as you go on your journey.
Thank you.
Lance, one thing in coming out of the interview that I walked away with from the Texas A&M kid is that he kind of gets it. He has a really wide perspective on the position and what he wants to do and how he's impacted by Jimbo Fisher. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out for him, though.
Yeah, a question for you. When you were interviewing prospects, whether it was Senior Bowl, Shrine, Combine, whenever, how much did you take into account their background of who they had, you know, the type of offense they played, who they had as a head coach, maybe if you knew the position coach or OC, versus maybe just saying, I don't care about that background as much as I care about what they're going to do for the team I'm working for?
No, I think background matters. Certain guys, certain teams, certain programs have a recipe that enables them to produce top NFL talent. You think about Iowa, the Hawkeyes, and how many offensive linemen have come out of that program. There's certain coaches that no matter where they go, the position coach has a knack for being able to identify and develop good players. And so with Jalen or some of these other guys, like playing in offenses where we've seen guys go and have success, for instance, like eyes are always alert on guys that come from Wisconsin. You think about Jake Ferguson, but you think about all the other guys that have come out of that program that have played tight end. Yeah, I think it matters. I think it has an impact.
Look at the quarterback position. You want to talk about profiles of certain positions. There's no doubt DBs, wide receivers at Alabama. But then when we look at quarterbacks and you look at the list this year, Bucky, Desmond Ridder, Cincinnati, Kenny Pickett, Pitt, Malik Willis, Liberty via Auburn initially. You take a look at Sam Howell, North Carolina. These are not Matt Corral, Ole Miss. These are not necessarily programs where you think of, you know, you think of the
football factories.
The profile of, yeah, for quarterbacks, you don't think about that. Like, for none of them.
So it's funny. But I think it's the changing dynamic of the quarterback position with so many guys bouncing and leaving and transferring and doing all of that stuff. That it's going to be hard more so to think that a guy is going to sit and wait because you have a special program where you've had a bunch of pros come through. Guys want to get onto the field. I think the bigger thing when it comes to the profile of the quarterbacks, the tools now are showing up. You know, I kind of kicked myself because I think we briefly mentioned Desmond Ridder. I know we talked about him in the pre-show. I feel bad that I didn't jump all the way in because I felt like he was probably a better athlete than we thought, and maybe he was underutilized at Cincinnati. But when you watch him work out, man, God, like, lit it up. You're kind of like, hey.
He's getting slept on. I mean, he is. It's just Kenny Pickett's hand, Malik Willis, is throwing 70-yard passes and giving stuff to homeless people out of a suitcase or whatever. I mean, that's the stories right now. Is look how far Malik can throw it. Look what a great guy he is. Kenny Pickett had a good workout. Kenny Pickett's got small hands. And Desmond Ritter's out there saying, y'all know that I played in the Final Four. Y'all know that I was a four-year starter and a four-year winner. Y'all know that I just ran in the 4.5s. Like, are we just going to forget this completely? And he's getting slept on. I mean, Matt Corral hasn't done anything, so he's kind of getting slept on. But Desmond Ritter's been out here. He's been doing stuff. Yeah. And I actually thought your guy, I'm going to say that because he's UNC, I thought Sam Howell had a nice day throwing the football yesterday. I was like, okay. I came home, Bucky, and I readjusted some grades based on what I saw, and I had to give a little bump to Sam Howell. I was a little too low on Sam Howell.
You know, here's the thing about all these quarterbacks, right? Because it's kind of the thing that, like, narratives kind of begin to take over the real story. So the narrative coming into it, not many quarterbacks in this class, no star power or whatever. That said, there's still guys who are solid in how they do it. It's just a matter of kind of the value, how much do you value their long-term potential? Do you value it at a first-round level or a second or third-round level? Those things. I'll say this about Desmond Ritter. When you go back and you look through time, the quarterbacks that tend to hit, he kind of checks off all of those boxes. Significant amount of experience, won a ton of games. Now you throw in the athleticism and the arm talent. There are a lot of things to like about, you know, the package that Desmond.
He's Ritter, a worker too.
Yeah.
If you ever talk to him, like, he works in the off season. He makes a checklist of things he wants to get better at. This is the kind of stuff that matters a lot to teams. I mean, it matters a lot, and Desmond Ritter's going to check a lot of intangible boxes too, Bucky. So now we got the athletic profile. Size is okay. I mean, it's okay by NFL standards. But, you know, the other thing that I think really matters is he's smart. He has a command of his offense, and he has a demeanor that you like. You don't see him get rattled on the field. And he took a big jump from year three to year four. You know, two guys really did that this year, and that was, you know, Malik Willis disappointed in terms of productivity this year. Sam Howell, I get that he lost running backs, really good running backs, wide receivers. You know, he didn't pop the way that we were expecting. Desmond Ritter and Kenny Pickett took big jumps from year three to year four. They got that Burrow bump where all of a sudden you say, wait a minute now, hold on. Kenny Pickett went from 13 touchdowns, 9 interceptions to 42-7. Okay, I got to take a look at this. And Desmond Ritter, while not as steep a jump, took a big jump too. So that's another check mark.
Yeah, it is another check mark. But Lance, like, had an opportunity to catch up with LA Chargers general manager Tom Telesco to talk about quarterbacks and what you look for. So after the break, we're going to talk to that interview.
Man, I'm really excited to have one of my guys going all the way back to my time with the Buffalo Bills, LA Chargers general manager, Tom Telesco. How you doing, Tom?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Man, look, it's been a nice journey for you, watching you kind of climb the ranks and have an opportunity to run your own team. And so some of these questions that I want to ask are things that I've always wanted to know because, like, look, you've sat at the feet of great ones, Bill Polian and some of the others. And so I just kind of want to pick your brain on team building.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so let's start right away because you guys have a quarterback, a young quarterback who everyone is labeling a superstar in Justin Herbert. So when you think about the quarterback position, what are the things that are essential to being a great quarterback in this league?
I think it really starts to take the physical abilities out of the way, and it's really the intangible part of it. And when we call it intangibles, but evaluate it a little bit, but just, you know, leadership skills, work ethic, football intelligence, preparation skills, and then be able to handle everything that comes along with being a franchise quarterback, which is a lot, you know, even off the field, you know, dealing with the media, fan base, everything in the organization, because you're the face of the franchise, being able to handle all that, but still play the position at a high level. So it's a lot of it's just the makeup of the player. You have to have that, number one. And then it goes to the physical characteristics, which, you know, Justin has really everything you're looking for. He has the size and the arm strength and the mobility, which was a big part. When we were scouting the quarterbacks that year, Anthony Lynn told me, and I 100% agree with him, he said, look, I want a quarterback who can move and who's mobile. Doesn't have to be like the rare that Lamar Jackson has, but he's got to be able to move. You know, if it's 3rd and 8 and nothing's there, he can go get 10 yards. He can move around the pocket, buy time. So that had to be a component in our next quarterback. You know, Justin had that. And then Justin has a great feel for touch and accuracy. You know, I know he has a big arm, but he knows how to layer the ball in. But, you know, you kind of go through those characteristics, but it really starts with the quarterback makeup, which is the same thing in high school, same thing at college. You know, have those leadership skills that you have to have to lead the football team.
It's funny because when we talk about Justin Herbert specifically, I remember his last two games in college. I remember watching him in the championship game,
Pac-12 championship game,
and then in the Rose Bowl. Yep. And I felt like he decided that he was going to let his athleticism and mobility shine. Did that make a difference, like being able to see him in those last two games, utilize that? Did that kind of, I won't say change the evaluation, but did it kind of complete the evaluation when it came to his athleticism?
It certainly added to it. That's the second half in that Rose Bowl where he took it over with his legs. And he realized, you know, first of all, we know he's big, but how fast he is at that level. So, yeah, that really helped. The fact that he can get out and run, and he's an athlete, that was a big part of it. And we had seen, you see bits and pieces of that. But when you see it at the very end, at the highest level playing in the Rose Bowl, that means a lot. Yeah.
It's funny because then he gets to the National Football League. He has, like, the impromptu start. How beneficial is it to play a young quarterback immediately when they start their NFL career?
You know what? I think it's unique to whatever the situation is, who the particular quarterback is, what type of team you have, who the other quarterback is. I just think it's different for everybody. I think some people learn better being on the field, getting those reps. That's the way Peyton Manning was. Some quarterbacks may learn better from just sitting from behind a veteran for a year. So I just think it kind of depends on who that quarterback is, who the coach is. So I don't think there's one philosophy on that.
You know, and then so we go, he has a great rookie season. And so then he has expectations heading into the second year. And by all accounts, he exceeded expectations.
With a new staff.
With a new staff. Yeah. Like, how uncommon is it for a guy to not only make those improvements his second year, but to do it while learning a new system and kind of just trying to figure it all out with new guys and new voices in his ear?
Yeah, I know he put a lot of work in last offseason and then through training camp and then during the season. Obviously, new staff, new system, a lot to learn for a quarterback. Obviously, big expectations from his rookie year, which the great thing about Justin is I don't think that stuff bothers him. He just has an even-keel personality. He knows what he can do. But it was a lot of work. You know, it wasn't easy for him. But again, when I talk about the makeup of the quarterback, the intangibles that you have to have those, that helped him through that. You know, having a big arm, being accurate, and being an athlete doesn't really help you learn a new system and try and implement that and all the timing that goes into that. So, but we saw, you know, he got along great with the staff. We have a really good quarterback room with Chase Daniel and Easton Stick. I think that helps too. Those guys work really well together. And we just saw it took off. And we shouldn't be surprised, I guess, but you never know. You really never know.
No, you never know. You mentioned something that's interesting, and I wonder if it changed your evaluation of quarterbacks. You talked about time watching Peyton Manning, how Peyton Manning kind of jumped in and did those things. When you have an opportunity as a team builder or an evaluator to see a guy like Peyton Manning do what he's done and the success that he's had, does it change what you look for in quarterbacks?
At least you know what you should be looking for, right? When you watch Peyton Manning for that many years, when you watch Philip Rivers for that many years, when you see how they work off the practice field, what they do in the building, yeah, it makes a big difference. Because that's the maybe the biggest part of the job is the preparation going into the week. It's just, you know, it's not college football where sometimes the talent just takes over. The NFL talent level, every team is almost the same. I mean, there's not a lot of difference in talent. You got to find those edges, find those margins. And a lot of that's preparation and film work and game planning. And, you know, to watch, you know, how Peyton went through that, watch Philip Rivers, how he went through that, you kind of know what you need to find.
So it's funny. I would say both of us are old school guys, and we've heard about when you build a team, you talk about the quarterback first, and then typically it's the pass rusher second. So you guys have a guy in Joey Bosa who has been phenomenal. When you think about the essential qualities that guys must have to be an elite pass rusher, what do you look for?
I think number one is probably relentlessness. That you have to have in this league. You saw that with we saw a lot of it with Max Crosby in that last game. You see it with Joey. You got to have a relentless, aggressive edge play style. That's number one. And then after that, it is a traits position. I mean, you have to have, you know, but you would like to have, you know, length and get off quickness off the ball, edge speed, but then change of direction because, you know, tackles in our league are pretty good. You know, you just can't run around tackles. The way Dwight Freeney used to run around ACC tackles all the time. And then Dwight gets the NFL and really develops one of the best spin moves we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But you have to have an array of moves and pass rush moves that kind of come along with that. But that, you know, you need some traits for that too. The quickness, the hand use, But yeah, it's a position you got to have rushers. You have rush and cover in this league. I know we have to stop the run to get the third down, but you got to rush and cover in this league. It's spread out. Obviously, you see from college to pro, it's a spread out league. Teams throw it. They throw it on early downs. You know, this whole first and 10, you know, you put out, you know, big run stoppers. Well, look, Kansas City's going to throw it on first down. So, you know, you have to be able to play it both ways. But now it's you got to have pass rushers in this league, and you got to have more than one.
Yeah, you have to have more than one. And so it appears that the trend has been like you have maybe one outside rusher and an inside rusher, or there are teams that can do it with two. Is there a preference for you if you were building a perfect team? Would you rather have two guys that could rush it both from the edges or one inside and one outside? Hmm.
I guess if you could only choose between the two, I would like one inside, one outside. You'd like to get some push up the middle. So if the edge comes up the field, the quarterback can't step up. I know you talked to a lot of quarterbacks. It's the pressure up front that gets them more than the edge. I mean, the edge, you can step up. Now, if the rusher rushes the right way, he's not running by the quarterback all the time. But a lot of edge rushers, if they come up the field, the quarterback steps up, the ball's out, and the ball's gone. So if you can get some either interior pressure just with power or win by quickness so the quarterback can't step up, it will, you know, lead to a sack to somebody else more than likely.
Okay, so you mentioned there, you talked about, look, it's about rushing the passer and then covering. You guys have a guy who's not even a what I would say a cover guy, but he's a Swiss Army knife in Derwin James. The uniqueness of finding safeties that can do so much in the box, outside the box, in the middle of the field. How important is it to have at least one of those guys on your defense?
Well, Derwin's just, he's unique. I don't even know what position he really plays because he can probably go anywhere you want on defense. It's funny, through my career, I guess early on, you know, safety wasn't as much as a priority position to me. I was always thinking corner. But now the way the game's played and the fact that it is spread out, you're in more nickel defenses. To have safeties that can cover and play the run, they're hard to find, but they really need to do both. There's a lot of responsibilities from the middle of the field for that safety. So in Derwin's case, you know, we can move him down like a linebacker. We can play him in the middle of the field as a middle of field safety. We could put him on a corner, and he can cover pretty well out there, which is, you know, hard to imagine for a guy his size. We could rush him off the edge. So, yeah, I mean, but that's Derwin James. There aren't a lot of Derwin James out there, but it's nice to have. But that safety position, you have to, especially in the defense we're playing, you have a lot of responsibilities that involves coverage and run support. And they're hard to find. So if they're hard to find, that means their value is going to be a little bit higher.
Look, so you guys have really been crushing it in the draft. And so my final part of this is I want to talk about Rashawn Slater and edge protectors, the importance of offensive tackles in this game. And is it just about the left tackle, or now we're at a point in the league where you need to have a strong left and right tackle? And are there differences in what we look for in each position?
I'm past left and right tackle at this point. To me, they're just tackles. They both have to pass protect. They both have to block the run game. There's no rule that the defense can only put their rusher on the offense's left side. Yeah. You know, they can line up anywhere they want. They can line up in the A gap. They can line up on the right. So, you know, you need two tackles that can pass protect on both sides. I think, at least to me, the days of having the big, strong, tough, limited athlete at right tackle, I think, is gone. You got to be able to pass protect on that side. So, yeah, so I know for us, you know, we may start off the process kind of labeling guys left and right, but in the end, they're really just OTs. They're just tackles. They got to be able, they're both the same guy, essentially.
So, look, it's great. It's great to have you on again. It's great to watch your team continue to progress. Best of luck to you next season.
Appreciate it.
I look forward to visiting back with you as we get closer to next year.
Anytime. Thanks, Bucky.
Lance, it's one thing when you are Tom Telesco and you've had a lot of success identifying top talent. You know, like, you kind of have a recipe. The top two guys in our class right now, we'll put Matt Corral. We'll take him out because he didn't participate. It's Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis. Real quick, what do you think about Kenny Pickett's workout? What do you think about him in general?
I like Kenny. I think the thing that concerns me a little bit is I think he's got an internal clock that, and you're not going to see this in a workout, but I think he's got an internal clock that gets a little skittish. That's from years of getting sacked, taking hits, having a line that didn't protect him. So when you watch him on tape, the one concern I have, and the reason I have a hard time getting past this, is because guys who get a little nervous in the pocket and start to see ghosts, that's hard to get rid of, man. That is a really hard, that's a really hard element of the game to get rid of once you bring it into the you know, how you operate. But I like Kenny Pickett. I think he throws with a pretty good arm. I think he throws on time. It comes out, throws into windows, and makes anticipatory throws. He's definitely mobile enough to get out of the pocket and extend. And I thought he had a pretty good workout. I really did. The small hands thing, you and I talked about it yesterday. It is a thing. Like, it is a thing. You can't just keep saying, well, Joe Burrow. Well, this isn't Joe Burrow. So stop telling me about Joe Burrow. This guy fumbled a lot in college. So we do have to take a look at that. So in general, though, Bucky, I think when you look at how he made the significant jump, as we talked about before, I mean, he put himself on the map. And that's what you can do your last year of school. You know, you can put yourself on the map very, very quickly. And that's what Kenny Pickett did. I thought, watching him over the summer, I thought, this guy looks like about a fourth. You know, he's got some traits that you might be able to work with. He's coming off 13 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Now we're talking about him as a first, and he is going to go in the first round now.
Yeah, he is going to go in the first round. Well, I had a chance to catch up with him after his workout. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Man, we're so excited to have on the Move the Sticks podcast one of the best quarterbacks in college football, Kenny Pickett from Pitt. Should I call it Pitt or Pittsburgh? What should I call it?
Pitt.
Okay, all right. Y'all change your colors. Y'all go back to the original, the Dan Marino days. So let's just talk about it. There's so many people excited about what you were able to show your final season at Pitt. How are you able to kind of put it together that final season and really make a tremendous improvement, not only in production, but in overall performance?
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of all the previous years, honestly, and with my teammates and my coaches, and it all came together really that final year. The game slowed down for me, put a lot of time in, put a lot of work. You know, teammates were dedicated to being at throwing sessions and film sessions, and, you know, I think all that hard work really paid off for us this last season.
All right, so now I'm a believer that experience can bring about expertise. And in watching you, I felt like you played the game this year like you were an expert for that offense. How did that extra year really help you get ready to play at the next level?
Yeah, it was huge, especially being in Coach Whipple's, you know, West Coast pro-style offense. Coming into these meetings and these interviews, hearing, you know, coaches teach me to play, and I have a lot of familiarity with what they're trying to teach me. So it's been a smooth kind of transition with the Jets offense now, and coming at the Senior Bowl, coming here and learning some new offenses and putting up on the board. And, you know, being able to spit back what they just taught me, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm very grateful for the experience I had with Coach Whipple.
So quickly, I want to go back to the Senior Bowl, because I do think that's important, because you talked about playing in the Jets offense and playing in a pro-style offense. How easy was it for you to digest that offense?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's easy, I'd say, at this level. You know that. But it's just dedicating myself to the playbook and having that experience of calling plays in the huddle, being able to get guys lined up and operate. That was something I took a lot of pride in at school, obviously, at Pitt. And then coming into the Jets offense, I really wanted to show that week.
So this week, a lot of what quarterbacks have to do is they have to talk to people in interviews. Sometimes those interviews may involve some X's and O's. What was it like for you? What was your experience like in the interview room?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of film work, you know, detailing my offense out. You know, some teams would like to teach a play. They'd put the film up, and then they would say, all right, go up and show me the play that I just taught you, you know, 20 minutes ago at the beginning of the interview. So a lot of cool different experiences, and I really enjoyed, you know, this whole process.
So, and think about the process. So you have pro day coming up. You have private workouts also on the horizon. You probably have some visits and those things. So in the next step in the process, what do you want to work on? What do you want to continue to show scouts?
Yep. I mean, it's just throwing at pro day now. You know, I feel like I tested pretty well today. So I checked that box, and I want to go throw really well at the pro day. So I want to watch this film, see what I need to work on, and then, you know, get right back to the drawing board.
Okay. So look, we're scouts. So scouts love to have comparisons. So when you look at the NFL game, who are the quarterbacks that you may either admire or pattern your game after?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, I think Joe Burrow. I mean, I watched a lot of his stuff at LSU. You know, he had that big season. That was something I wanted to do, and I came back and did that. And, you know, I loved watching his tape. You know, Russell Wilson is another guy. I feel like I show a little bit of the same stuff. So I think a couple guys, I just want to be able to do a lot of different things.
Okay, last thing. So now when you go into the National Football League, you are the guy who created the fake slide, and you also made them ban the fake slide. Are we going to break that out at the NFL level? Are we going to kind of fake that out and see if we can get that going?
I don't think so. The first play I had at the Senior Bowl, the other team was telling me not to try it. So I think it's a one and done for the fake slide.
Well, look, man, we know even if you have to put that away and put it in your bag, we know that you can bring plenty of other stuff. We're excited to continue watch you progress and become a great player at the next level. Best of luck to you going forward.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
So, Lance, like you pointed out, man, I think the guy kind of gets it in terms of understanding the leadership and the intangible qualities that you must have to be a leader of a franchise. And so it'd be fun to kind of see him go on to the next level and see what kind of success he could have. I think the other kid, Malik Willis, I think he is the one that has really caught fire since the Senior Bowl. When you think about how people just talked about that performance on Wednesday at the Senior Bowl, inclement conditions, and how he's just ripping lasers through the rain, through the wind, I think it opened a lot of people's eyes up. And when you look at the guys who've had success of late, man, it's been the big tools guys like Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson has had success because his athleticism is off the charts. Pat Mahomes being a freakish thrower and playmaker. And so for Malik, man, I think we now can see a path to him being a starting quarterback in the league and potentially have a success.
Yeah, no question. It's tough because, you know, when you really get down on the tape, it's not great. And especially over the second half of the season. And I just thought, man, he's just that draft stock. He's going to go into the fall into the second round. And then, you know, a funny thing happens. You go to the Senior Bowl, you make a couple throws. You look a certain way. He's a very physically imposing. He's well put together. Really, it reminds me physically of the way Jalen looks. Like, Jalen is a well put together dude. He spends a lot of time in the weight room. Jalen Hurts. But then you see him throw the football and some of the arm talent throws he has, and you say, oh, okay, not a lot of people can do this. And then you watch him get outside of the pocket and you make plays on the moves and make plays on the move at the Senior Bowl. And what you do is you start to see flashes of, I see that in the NFL with other guys, or I've seen that in the NFL from this guy or from that guy. And you start to, as you mentioned, that's a really good way to say it. You start to see a pathway for this guy moving forward. And a big mistake that I made was with Justin Herbert. I remember watching him on tape and I liked him better than Tua. And I said, man, I think I might put a 6-7 on him. But then I couldn't get around some of the inconsistencies he had, right? He was a little bit inconsistent. But the flashes, I didn't put enough stock into the flashes. So there's some guys you have to grade the flashes. Josh Allen, Justin Herbert are great examples of it. Guys who got better wide receivers on the next level and had better windows to throw into. And the physical talent that they had, the special tools, really took over. I don't think that you could argue that Malik Willis has some of the same potential tools and opportunities once he gets to, I think, a different offense would benefit him a little bit more. And then, you know, once you get better wide receivers and a better offensive line, because he was under duress a lot this year, all of a sudden you start to say, wait a minute, I've seen this with Josh Allen before. I've seen this with Justin Herbert before. I better start grading the flashes. And Malik Willis looks like a grade the flashes guy, honestly. If you grade the flashes, you might not miss on the upside. If you just grade the tape, you are going to miss on the upside. That's just the truth.
So, Ozzy, so got a chance to catch up with Malik Willis. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Excited to have one of the hottest prospects in the 2022 draft class, quarterback from Liberty, Malik Willis. Welcome to the Move to Six program. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, so look, man, it's been a bit of a whirlwind since the end of the season. You had an outstanding performance at the Senior Bowl. Then you go to the Combine. Just talk about the process that you've gone through since the end of the season.
It's really been a grind. I mean, you take off a couple, a couple weeks just to let your body recover. You get ready for the Senior Bowl. You lock in on that. You get the plays before the Senior Bowl. So you try to, grind as hard as you can on those. You go execute, you got to do it. You get past the Senior Bowl and you're back to training. You go back to training. Now it's time for Combine in the next few weeks. Then you're done with Combine and you're training for Pro Day. It's a continuous thing. It's a little cycle.
It has been a cycle. You know, what's interesting, it seems like there has been more buzz around your name since the Senior Bowl. A lot of people really impressed with the tools and the skill set. So coming into the Combine, what were some of the things that you wanted to show scouts?
I really was just coming to, see these other guys throw. I never seen them throw. I didn't get to throw against them. I mean, we all throw in a different, receivers than we throw to. So it's, a little growing pains. But I just wanted to see them throw in person. I'm like competing, man. It's cool being around them, too. I mean, you get to know guys doing the same thing you're trying to do.
So I had an opportunity to talk to a couple coaches, and they were very impressed with the way that you carried yourself in the interview process. How did you handle that process? How did you prepare for it? And how did you feel that it went?
I mean, I felt like I was well prepared. I mean, watched a lot of film, digested a lot of information on myself first and my offense as well, and just trying to be able to pick up stuff like when I had to go to the Senior Bowl. Learning how to, you know, execute those plays gave me a little insight on how they operate at the next level, even though it's just a, you know, portion. It was very cool to, you know, just to have that little, you know, that little moment of an NFL quarterback before you get there, even though it's not, you know. But it definitely was cool. I just focused on my plays and understanding what I was, you know, being asked to do every play. And making sure I was seeing the film again and know what I was thinking at that point so I can go in there and do it fluently.
You know, so in the last few years, there have been a lot of quarterbacks that have kind of popped that had outstanding tools. Guys like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, even Patrick Mahomes. When you look at the NFL game, you look at some of the quarterbacks. Who are the guys that you admire? Who are the guys that you want to pattern your game after?
I mean, all three of those are good guys, but I just want to be around for a long time and take a little bit from each and everybody. I just want to be the best version of myself if I can. And I know I haven't reached that yet, but we got time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, we do have time. And so you got a little time before your pro day.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you're working on? I think your quarterback coach is Quincy Avery.
Yes, sir.
What are some of the things you and Q are working on to get better as a player?
Coach Quincy and Coach Sean, they just, you know, basically not letting me do anything that I like to do. You know, we're doing everything that I need to do. We're not doing anything that I like to do. So we're just working on executing the, you know, base stuff, making sure my footwork's on base. It gets boring, when you just want to get better, I mean, it's just the process. It's a process. You got to love it.
Okay, so as a former scout, I have to tell you, a lot of what we do when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks has little to do with what they do on the field. A lot to do it off the field. And so there's a video that has gone out that may have gone viral about you meeting a guy on the street, a homeless guy, and kind of digging into your bag and giving away some of your stuff. Talk about that. Talk about, like, your generosity and your empathy for people and how that can help you be a better leader in the locker room.
That was a lady, y'all. Chill. She was a pregnant lady. She had on a sign. So I felt bad. I walked into the Nike suite. I didn't have any money, though, like cash. So I walked back out. I was like, well, I got a suitcase full of stuff. I just gave her a couple of shirts and all that type of stuff. So, I mean, I felt bad when I walked past her. Like, I mean, where I'm at now in life, I mean, I'm pretty well off understanding where I come from and whatnot. But just, you know, being able to help others, you know, I felt like I had to, you know.
It was great to see. And because of your spirit and your compassion, like, there are a lot of people rooting for you. I just want to say, man, I wish you nothing but the best. I'm excited to see how your NFL career turns out. I look forward to talking to you when you are a pro and you're officially in the National Football League. Thanks so much for joining the program, Malik Willis.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Obviously, man, the kid is a great kid. All the stuff that he's been able to do. I think he's kind of surprised people just with not only the physical tools, but in interviews and talking to coaches. They've been really impressed with where he's at right now in terms of his knowledge, in terms of how he's able to kind of put together the concepts and respond to their questions. And so I think that bodes well. Now, I think we both would agree he's not a ready to play right now. But as we've seen in this league, if you have superior athletic traits and you have tools that can enable you to survive out there while you're figuring it out, guys are more than willing to give you a chance to play. So we'll see if he gets his opportunity to play. And if he plays well, when he gets that chance very early in his career.
Bucky, you watch baseball. I mean, home run hitters play. Home run hitters get a chance to play and play early and win Rookie of the Year awards. While he may not have you don't look at him as a profile of an early playing quarterback. The home run tools he has, I mean, that's what you pay attention to. And that's what Malik Willis has more than any other quarterback in this draft. He can hit home runs, and that's, you have to pay attention to that in today's NFL. This is not a dink and dunk down the field, 11, 12, 13 play drive. Tom Brady's not stepping on that field anymore for one of those drives. Peyton Manning, that's a wrap. He's out of here. Drew Brees is out of here. You got to be able to hit home runs right now, and Malik can go yard.
You know, so now let's talk about wide receivers. You know, we talked at the beginning, like, how many guys ran fast, and, you know, it was like a track meet out there in terms of, like, the speed, the explosiveness, the way the guys were kind of lighting up the track. Who are some of the guys that stood out to you in your mind?
Well, to me, Velus – well, okay, so I don't want to go too deep into the pile of wide receivers, but obviously I thought that the two that really popped the most, the three that popped the most to me that are going to be impact wide receivers in the first 2 days of the draft are going to be Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Christian Watson. Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, we know both of these guys. They're coming from Ohio State. Olave ran really fast, did not have as explosive a workout in the other elements. Garrett Wilson ran much faster than a lot of people anticipated. I thought he'd be in the 4.45 range. He ran a 4.38, which, you know, was, I think, once you hit that 4.3 mark, it's just different, and that's what he did. And then Christian Watson, Bucky, this is a guy, you want to talk about somebody who's helped himself during the process. He ran a 4.36 yesterday, and Christian Watson comes from North Dakota State, which is like the Alabama of FCS. They just are a dominant, dominant program. But he also jumped 38 and a half inches. His broad jump was over, was right at close to, well, right at 11, over 11 feet, over 11 feet, and he's 6 foot four, close to 210 pounds. Like, man, that is a crazy physical, you know, profile paired up with speed, paired up with explosiveness. And I think he really, really helped himself. He's a guy that I thought would be a fourth rounder coming into the Senior Bowl, and now we step to the plate, and that guy's made himself money. I mean, he's going to be in the second round now for sure.
Well, Lance, you kind of mentioned the Ohio State guys. And so what I want to do is we have a couple of interviews with the Ohio State Buckeye wide receivers, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. Let's listen to what both of the Buckeyes had to say. It'll be Olave first, and you hear Wilson after him.
Welcome back to Move the Sticks. We got one of the best wide receivers in the 2022 draft class, Chris Olave from the Ohio State University. I know people get mad when I don't say the D before of it. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm blessed to be here.
Look, so everyone was really excited to see you perform at the Combine. How do you feel about your performance?
I felt good. I wanted to come out here, prove it to myself first. Been a battle versus me this whole process. So just wanted to put out on the field, see my speed, see my routes, and did that.
So what have you been working on since the end of the season, like in preparation for the Combine? What are some of the things that you've been working on to get ready?
I've been getting a lot of therapy, trying to get my body right first, worked on my diet, started eating way better instead of eating terrible in college. And then just working on my speed, working on my start, and then working on my routes.
Okay, I got to hear about this diet thing because I always wonder, about the nutrition part of it. So you say you used to eat terrible at Ohio State, but yet you're the all-time leader in touchdowns.
Yes, sir.
So what were you eating when you were playing at Ohio State?
Man, I was eating McDonald's. I was eating all the fast food, Wendy's, all that stuff.
And still scoring touchdowns like that?
Yeah, still doing that. It's
I don't know if I would abandon that, because if I scored 35 touchdowns in my career, I still might stop by and get the dollar menu and those things. So, in thinking about like having an opportunity to play at Ohio State, your wide receiver room is so competitive. There's so many great guys there. What did you learn from competing to earn your spot at Ohio State?
When you go to Ohio State, you compete against the best every day. So you got my freshman year, I came in, Terry McLaurin, Paris Campbell, a whole bunch of NFL receivers in there. I learned from them. And then you got guys, Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams, Jackson Smith, and Jibba. We just compete against each other every day and just try to get better. And that helps us at the end of the day.
Okay, so now Ryan Day is a mastermind. He's putting it all together. We got all these guys who can get down. So when you're all in a critical situation and the ball has to go to somebody, how does he determine who to get the ball to?
We're all confident. I mean, Coach Day is one of the smartest coaches in the college with an NFL background. So we trust him at the end of the day. We got great receivers at Ohio State. So we're comfortable wherever the ball goes.
Oh, so in thinking about that, because you talked about Coach Day having an NFL background, but your wide receiver coach, Brian Hartline, he's quickly being recognized as one of the best
in the country.
What have you learned from him? Because he played for a long time in the league, and then he's certainly one of the best coaches.
He played in the NFL, so when he's saying something, we all listen. He did it in the NFL, and he came back to help us. So he developed into the best in the country. Like I say, the best in the country, and we all love him at the end of the day.
Cool. All right, so we just got the pro day left. What are some of the things you want to work on before the pro day?
Just running a couple more routes. I feel like we put some routes on the field in the combine, but me and Garrett want to go out there on pro day and run some more routes and probably bench press.
All right, man. Well, you know, NFL Network is certainly going to be there, so I can't wait to watch you work out. I can't wait to see where you go in the NFL draft. Thanks so much for joining Move the Sticks.
Yes, sir. Bless.
Next, join us on the Move the Sticks podcast, one of the top wide receivers in college football, one of the top prospects in the 2022 NFL draft, Garrett Wilson from the Ohio State University? Because I have to say the, right? It's mandatory that I say the.
It is. It kind of is. You know, I miss it sometimes. Appreciate you doing that, though.
No, that's cool. So, look, how's your combine experience been?
Yeah. You know, it's been a long week. You know, I was just talking about it, but, you know, don't get me wrong. It's a blessing. But, you know, we were bouncing around doing, you know, things all over the place. And, you know, you got something to prove while you're here. So try to keep that mindset going throughout.
So what were some of the things that you wanted to prove?
Yeah. You know, first off, I wanted to prove that I could run faster than what, you know, most people were saying to me. And, you know, I wanted to also prove my knowledge for the game of football. You know, when I got in those meeting room with coaches, you know, I really wanted to show that I had coverage recognition, all that types of things. So,
and think about it, when I look at your game and I watch you on tape, I feel like you're a natural number one receiver. I feel like your route running ability to catch over the middle of the field, all those things are outstanding. But when you look at yourself on tape, what would you say your best traits are?
Yeah, I think I go up and get the ball above my head, you know, better than most my size. You know, I play bigger than my size. So, you know, I feel like, you know, that 50-50 ball is where I, you know, where I strive and, you know, make a lot of plays.
So it's been a very competitive wide receiver room at Ohio State during your time. A lot of guys that have come and gone, that have gone on to the National Football League. So when you play with guys that are that talented, what do you learn from one another?
Yeah, I mean, you got no choice but to improve your game, and you'd be dumb not to, you know, take things from other people's games and trying to add it to yourself. So like you said, it's really competitive room. You know, everyone brings something else to the table. So, you know, you got guys like Chris, Jackson, J-Mo was there. You know, I tried to take something from all their games and, you know, improve myself, you know, by taking some of their skills.
So you guys are unique because you have a former NFL receiver who is your wide receiver coach, exactly, in Brian Hartline.
Yeah.
What have you been able to learn from him?
I talk about this a lot. You know, he's someone that, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a visual learner, but with having Coach Hartline, he makes it super easy to learn, you know. He can kind of show you everything that, you know, we the drills we're going through. He can run the drill for you. He can run the route that he wants you to run, you know, the way he wants you to run it. If you're messing it up, you know, that type of thing, you know. So, like I said, he was probably 3-4 years removed from the league when he had got that job. And, you know, having a young coach that can be, you know, really active, loves to play, you know, it makes it easy on us.
Okay, so the next step for you is your pro day. What are some of the things you want to work on before the scouts come and have a chance to see you at Ohio State?
Yeah, just overall clean up my route running. You know, I feel like I left some things on the field today. So, you know, I definitely wanted to run well, like I said, but, you know, I had a lot more to prove than that. And I feel like I didn't do that all the way. So, you know, pro day comes March 23rd. We're going to have CJ throwing. You know, me and Chris are going to be doing our thing. Ruckert going to be back healthy. So I'm excited for that for sure.
Hey, well, look, we're excited to see you progress. You're talented. You're outstanding in all aspects of playing the game. So we appreciate wish you the that. Best of luck as you go.
I really appreciate that. Cool. Sir, thank you all for having me.
Well, cool, Lance. One of the things about when you play at The Ohio State University, you not only have great coaching in Ryan Day, but both guys mentioned Brian Hartline, a former NFL wide receiver who has really transitioned well into becoming one of the best receiver coaches in the college football landscape. I think you certainly can see his impact on their game, not only in terms of the way they go about their business as route runners and playmakers, but the way they handle themselves and the way they can articulate the things that are necessary to the position. They have a pro day coming up near the end of March. Want to see both of those guys continue to add a little polish to the route running part of the game. But, man, I think it's pretty much a wrap that both of these guys may hear their names called at the end of the first round.
Yeah, they're both going to – I think they'll both hear their names called maybe by the time Cleveland drafts. I mean, whoever's on the board may be a Cleveland Brown, and that may be the way it is.
All right, so, LZ, we still got 3 more days of workouts, a lot of stuff to evaluate and discuss. We have the O-line and running backs on tap for the day. Really looking forward to seeing the big guys because I think this could be the cluster buster, meaning how we separate the clusters in terms of the tiers and those things based on athleticism as opposed to the tape. So I'm looking forward to it. But I know everyone can make sure they check us out all weekend. We're doing Combine Today, which airs an hour before the Combine takes place. Make sure you catch up with Matt Money Smith, Lance Z, and myself. We'll be kind of previewing all of the events of the day, reviewing some of the things that happened the previous day. We'll just kind of keep you up to date on all the news. So thanks for tuning in to Move the Sticks podcast. We'll check you out next time.